Welcome to a Veterans Podcast, powered by Wisconsin Veterans Network, the show where we hear unique, inspiring stories from veterans all over. Veterans who've transitioned, who've overcome obstacles, and even those still struggling. We will learn all veterans have a unique story, ones filled with pain and triumphs, and we will learn no veteran is alone, no matter the path they took. We share their stories to help motivate and inspire the world, to help understand what it means to be a veteran, and most of all, we share to give them a voice amongst the noise. You can find us at aveteranspodcast.com to learn more and how you can be a part of the show. Welcome back to A Veterans Podcast. I'm excited to have you listening today. We have a really awesome guest that I found on Instagram. And so I'm super excited for him to tell his story and just to learn from him. He's an Army guy. I know. I can't help it. Sometimes, you know, whatever. Go Army. So I'm really excited to have him on the show. I'm excited to feel like I'm somewhere else for 35 minutes or 40 minutes or however long this podcast is, because outside of my studio is about 14 inches of snow, and I am over it already. And I know we've been lucky to not get a whole lot of snow in Wisconsin this winter. However, we got 14 inches of snow in like 4 days, and I'm over it. And we're supposed to get like 3 to 5 more inches. So if you happen to be listening to this in the summer, be grateful for the sunshine. And if you're listening to this in the winter, we'll get through this. Like 6 more weeks, I think. So anyways, today's show is sponsored by Wisconsin Veterans Network, an established Wisconsin nonprofit ran by veterans for veterans. Their mission is to provide guidance and support for all veterans, whether Guard, Reserve, active, or even a bad discharge, looking for any kind of assistance in the state of Wisconsin. If you're a Wisconsin veteran looking for an answer, whether a simple question about benefits or are currently homeless, give them a call today. You can find out more information about them at wisvetsnet.org or on our website, aveteranspodcast.com. We are also on Instagram at A Veterans Podcast, and we are on TikTok, my friends. So go ahead and add us. We are A Veterans Podcast on TikTok too. So anyways, on to the show. Today we have Sergeant First Class Joseph James. He is or was in the Army. He served from 2000 to 2009. And he's got a really incredible story, so I'm excited to share it with you. So let's give him a call.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, welcome to A Veterans Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on here today.
Yeah, I'm super excited, especially because secrets, I give away like my backstage information, and we spoke a little bit before this call, and so now I have even more questions for you, so I hope you're ready.
Well, since it's about me, I think I'll ace this.
Oh, geez, spoken like a true Army guy. I'm Navy, so, you know, nothing but love, but come on now.
Oh, no, I got you. You'll find how much I love Navy in a few minutes.
So I already told everybody you were in the Army and when you served, so why did you join the military?
Well, a few reasons, actually. I was really inspired, by my family who, a lot of us, you know, veterans, we come, from a, family members that serve, especially myself. I came from a long line of service members. Mm-hmm. Actually, my father was a Navy corpsman, and my grandfather was a CB in World War II. He fought in Guadalcanal.
Nice.
And built the airfield. So I'm actually a Navy brat. I was born in Bremerton, Washington at the shipyard hospital there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm originally from, born and raised Washington State. So I love the Navy, and I love serving our country. And so I really don't care what branch you're in. I just really excited to be able to meet anyone who's ever served, because when you raise your right hand, you're signing a blank check all the way up to your life. And so I always appreciate everyone who's ever served our country. You know, so why Army though, right?
Yeah, for real.
Okay, so it basically boils down to, from all the stories I've heard from my dad, my grandfather, especially World War II, you know, it's like, if it hits the fan and you're on a boat, it's like all you have is the ocean and sharks.
That's real life.
You know, so that's how I was a teenager. So that's how I saw it. But like in the Army or Marine Corps, like if it hits the fan, you can go behind that rock. You can get behind that tree. You could hop in a truck and get out of there if it was that bad, you know. So I like that I didn't have to rely on swimming to survive. So
that's fair.
I was also, you know, really inspired by the G.I. Joes back in the day. You know, like a lot of guys around my age, I'm a late 30s. So I always loved the idea of, you know, that, you know, even as a kid, I thought, like, oh, man, I could be a real life one. And so, you know, in that, and kind of harkens back to, like, you know, even President Kennedy talking about, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So being raised for a long time by my grandparents, actually, for a while, I've learned a lot of those old school, you know, thoughts about giving back, not just taking, but to do something in return. And that's what I tell a lot of people. You don't have to join the military. You know, we all get that. It's like, I would have joined, but yeah. Whatever answer.
Oh, those are
and
the
so
worst.
For me, what I do is I like to give them out. So I'm like, you know what? Not everybody's meant to serve. We can all give back in different ways. Your way may be different than what I did, but it doesn't mean it's any less or, you know, than serving. So I was like, go find a way to give back. So that is the main reason why I joined the Army.
Well, I like that. And that's a very nice answer to tell people, because usually, I'm not going to lie, I roll my eyes a little bit and I'm like, okay, nice story, bro. Moving on.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. Like, well, I don't know if you're talking about the injury part, but being injured, being visible, mm-hmm. I get that a lot. It's like, oh, well, I served. But no, nowhere like you did. You know, yeah. They always start off like that. I'm like, dude, no, don't say that. We all gave in our own way, man. It's like, I would have preferred going 20-some years without getting blown up.
Yeah, that would have been nice, right?
Yeah, so that's what I always tell people. It's like, no, don't start like that. You know, it's like, just tell me what you did, and I'll thank you, and we'll move on with our lives. Don't automatically start off by acting like you're worse than I am, because you are definitely not.
Well, that's a great outlook. So I have to ask, because I ask a lot of people this, especially because you joined in 2000. So yeah. That was like pre-terrorist attacks and pre, like, anything crazy happening in the world. I mean, there were still crazy things, but not like, you know, post 9/11. So where were you on September 11th, and how did that impact your career moving forward?
Well, okay, so I was at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. I was a member of the 3rd Brigade Rockassons, the 187th Infantry Regiment. And so we were just finishing up PT that morning, and when we saw the towers get hit. And I remember it was kind of humorous, because we had like a EO a class that we were forced to go to that day. Mm-hmm. It was Equal Opportunity. And it's probably about sexual harassment, but who knows? The reason why I'm saying that is not because it's not important. It's because the first sergeant came in and said, I need 2 volunteers. And me being like a young, you know, like 19-year-old, I was like, I'll do it. There's something going on. I want to know what's going on. And so they asked for 2 volunteers. And what happened is we went to the battalion staff duty, and then they're showing the video of the second plane hitting when we were in there. And so me and another soldier were, you know, young, you know, E-nothing. Mm-hmm. And we go, first of all, what's this detail? What do you want us to do? He goes, and he gives us 2 Maddox handles. Those are the axe handles, or the pickaxe handles that come with your kit for the truck. Mm-hmm. And he hands it to us. He goes, I need you to go to the arms room and guard the door.
Oh.
I'm not joking. I went out in the middle of post, and he says, go down to the arms room and guard the door. So me and my buddy are just down there, like, for hours. going like, what are we doing? It's like, if somebody is honestly trying to steal our weapons that's locked up behind this thick door with bars and everything, two guys with sticks aren't going to stop them.
Oh,
you
no.
know what I mean? Like, oh, if you made it all the way to the middle of the post, like killing everybody, yeah, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So, I got to be able to see some of that on the first plane hitting around breakfast time and the second one a little bit later. But yeah, so I saw that. So for me, I saw two types of people that day. What I mean by that is there's people who join to serve their country no matter what may come, and those who join for college. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, again, there was like USS Cole was hit. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much, you know, going on in our country. But when that day happened and we're getting ready to be spun up to go to Afghanistan, we're one of the first units, 101st, we're one of the first units there besides Special Forces.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're getting spun up, you can see like the fear in people's eyes. And then you had people like me and my buddies, you know, some of them are like, oh yeah, this is why I joined. This is what we're waiting for. Like, we get to bring the fight back to these guys. And so, but you could also see those that are like, hey, you know, this is getting too real. I only wanted to do the 4 years to get to college, you know, mm-hmm. the GI Bill. And they weren't like in the game mentally. There was something that you could see a switch. Mm-hmm. Those who are ready to bring the fight and those that just didn't want to be involved at all, even though it was, about 2,000 people of ours were killed that day. So, yeah. So for me, I was ready to fight. I was like, my grandpa fought. You know, my dad missed out on all that because it was Corman. But mm-hmm. Not say Corman and go, but, you know, there was no Vietnam at that time mm-hmm. for him. So, yeah. So I got to be able to, this is my opportunity. This is my moment to be able to bring the fight to the enemy of our country.
Awesome. That's really that's probably one of the more interesting stories that I've heard about what you did in response to September 11th that, I like it. That was good.
I'm glad you said it's interesting because you're like, that's one of the most boring stories I've heard.
That's
you
great.
Better start picking up your game, Joe.
No, that was outstanding. That's I'm probably going to tell that story at the dinner table tonight. And the children will look at me like, what in the world are you talking about? It's fine. So why did you get out of the military? And was it your choice? And I haven't told anybody your story. So,
okay. Well, good.
Yeah.
I'll fill you in. So why did I get out? And was it my choice? No, it was not my choice. But ultimately, later on, became my choice. And I'll explain that in a sec. In April 8, 2008, I was on a MIT team. I was an E6 promotable at the time. And a MIT team is the military transition team. Those are the guys that were training the Iraqi military to take over their country one day.
Okay.
That was my fourth combat deployment. I did like one deployment almost every other year. So it was like, go home for a year, leave a year, home for a year, leave for a year, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're coming back from mission near Sadr City, and I was the gunner of the command vehicle. Major Mark Rosenberg was our MIT team leader. So we were a small element, about like 15 people. We had our own personal security detachment, and then we got hit by an EFP, which is explosively formed penetrator. Basically, it's a cylinder with a copper plate, and when it explodes, the copper plate rips off and becomes like a super malleable, like penetrating slug of like molten copper, and it ripped right through our armor. It's really nasty stuff, and come to later on find out that, you know, Iran had their hand in that stuff, and, you know, they're funneling money, bomb making material to Mukta al-Sadr and his Mahdi militia in that area. But so I got hit that day. I almost died, lost both of my legs in the blast. I had to start tourniquet my own legs, and then finally the medic and all the other guys were able to get to me. It was a big concern at that time that it was going to be a complex attack, mm-hmm. which means that the enemy will set up an ambush. They'll start off with an IED and then use small arms fire to take us out. And so there's a big concern about that. So everybody had to stay on the guns, and one of the guns is just taken out. And so while they were trying to recover me, the driver, Tony Hardy, and Major Rosenberg, we were, all my guys were setting up, you know, hasty defensive positioning. We're calling it for QRF, quick reaction force. And I remember, and I'll make this quick, I don't know how much time your podcast is, because I could talk forever, like any veteran.
Yeah.
But I remember being, doing my legs, trying to flow the blood. Both of my femoral arteries were severed in my legs. And I remember trying to slow that down. And then I remember being in the back of the Humvee. They pulled me out. Both of my legs were gone at that time. I think my left leg had a little bit left, but it was basically tore off too. And I remember thinking that if I'm going to die, I want to die comfortably. So I started ripping off my vest, you know, everything I could to get comfortable. Because I figured I was going to die anyway, so might as well, you know, not have that thing on me.
Oh, wow.
And then as we're waiting for the birds to come in, I remember hearing a platoon of tanks. They were the QRF or Abrams. Mm-hmm. And when they called in that there's recent contact and, you know, medevac, these tanks come flying in as fast as they could go. You can hear the jet engines on them. And they kind of like slid to a stop right next to me. And I remember thinking at that time, I was like, Big Brother's in the fight. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't have to worry about it right now. Big Brother's in the fight. So they surrounded us, and there was luckily no complex attack, or if there was, they would have picked a bad time to initiate those tanks there. But so long story short, I was seriously injured. I was in critical condition for a long time, had initial surgery, and then once I started to get back to the States, I started going through recovery down at the Center for the Intrepid down in Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And they actually had a program I didn't know about, because I was E7 now at that time. They said that I could, it's called like COAD or something like it. It's like continuation of active duty, where mm-hmm. because I was branch qualified, I could go to Fort Sill and teach the other 13 foxes, you know, because I've been in for so long that I could stay in, and I would stay active even with prosthetics.
Oh, wow.
And I could still stay in the Army, but you would have to be at bases where there has good medical care, prosthetic care.
Yeah.
So it really limits kind of your career track. And then I remember at that time talking to my wife about that, and said, hey, this is a possibility. And she was still in college. And so I was talking to her about that. And so I made the decision. I said, hey, my time is done. I know that. Because I remember the day of my injury, I was no longer Sergeant James, you know, Staff Sergeant James at that time. I became Joe James. And I remember one of the guys who grabbed my hand was Kieran Polentita. He's a lieutenant. No, sorry, he was captain at that time. And I knew him previously, and I called him by his first name. I remember mm-hmm. that. I said, hey, Kieran, I'm not doing good. I got you, James. You know, I got you, Joe. And I remember at that time, I wasn't a soldier. I wasn't an NCO. I was a man. And then I remember that later on going, you know what? That guy, that Sergeant James, doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That time is done, and I've seen too many people stay in longer than they should have, and I said I owe my wife and I owe me to have a better life, and so I decided not to do that, and I decided to medically retire.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's totally cool. So I'm not gonna lie, something that really like caught my attention. So you were married when you got injured in Iraq,
yeah,
and you said that your wife was in college.
Yeah.
So she was how old, or you were how
old? Oh, she's 3 years younger than me, and so we've only been married for a couple of years at that time.
That's a lot. Like, college is tough in general, and then to, like, have to go through that. So kudos to her. I just want to do a shout-out to your wife, because sometimes I think we need to recognize those spouses and significant others that, like, are there. You know,
she's the reason why I am who I am today. Like, she helped me through the whole process. If she didn't push me, like the physical therapist and all that, I wouldn't be mentally where I'm at. So she played a big role in my life.
That's awesome. That's so important, I think. And any support system, really, it could be a family member or a spouse or a significant other. I think like that makes a huge difference in somebody's transition. But we'll get to that later.
Yep.
So as you were going through like the healing process and the recovery process, did you do anything to prepare to get out of the military, or were you solely focused on your health and like that type of recovery?
Okay, well, the kind of a canned answer would be you can never really be prepared because my mentality was to be the next sergeant major of the Army. I mean, I got promoted so quickly and so fast because I was dedicated. I loved what I was doing. And I mean, I only did 9 years in, but I got promoted E7 before that. So I really loved being in the military. But yes and no. I had to get used to not only the lifestyle as a civilian, but I also had to get used to the lifestyle as being a disabled veteran, disabled person. And that's something I've never had to experience before in my life. I could say, yeah, I've been a civilian before. Yeah, I have, you know, and then when we're not on duty, of course, we do whatever we want. So that's kind of easy. But how do I live my life being altered and changed? So, yeah, I want to say ultimately, like, there's no way you can really be prepared. But, yeah, I did, you know, especially my wife and I had a daughter, a young daughter at the time. I left when she was, like, 6 months old, you know, and I was leaving for a 15-month deployment.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, so I did. We actually, because of my injury, I got $100,000. It was a, like basic 50 per leg. And I know, ooh, I'm rich.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but just the way you said that was funny.
I know, right? It's like, hey, thanks for getting blown up here, you know, leave. So it's part of the, you know, the, I think it's SGLI or something. I forget what it was. But so I got 100,000. And so my wife, who's way smarter and better than I can ever be, she's like, let's save that money and let's buy a house with it, free and clear. And of course, this is 08, 09. I got out in 09, so that housing bubble still kind of crashed around then. So when I did retire out, we bought a like $130,000 home for like 109, you know, 105. And so we only had to spend $5,000 out of pocket. So long story short, because of her being smart, you know, a lot of the other service members especially the lower enlisted guys, they're buying bass boats, they're buying, you know, like new cars, and they're dropping like cash, you know, a lot. But you know, so yeah, so I did get a property. We did decide before I even left Texas where we're gonna move to. So we could have moved anywhere, but I decided on Tennessee. I'm originally from Washington State, of course. My wife is originally from Kentucky, so Tennessee made a lot of sense for us. It was close to a VA hospital in Nashville. It was close enough to her parents and some of her family. They're still in Kentucky. I love Tennessee. And then, you know, later on I'll talk about, but when you do decide to transition, what is the best state to go to? Yeah, of course, if you have a home state and you have, you know, roots there, go to that. But, you know, for me, most of my roots and family spread across the country. So I picked Tennessee because it had really great veteran benefits. But, and so I picked that. I just started looking at what I could do now that I'm out. And I think I'll talk a little bit more about that, but, having a clear plan, would have been better, more instrumental for me had I did that. But I think mostly I wanted to get away as far from the Army as possible. So I just said, hey, I have a house. I have, you know, medical retirement I'm getting. Let's settle in Tennessee and then figure out things from there. You know.
Nice. So did they, when you were going through the recovery process and knew that you were going to do your medical board for medical retirement and all that, did they also do your, like, VA comp and pen appointments?
Yeah, okay, so... when I was going through the process, like all the paperwork, the MEB, PB, whatever, the medical evaluation board, even before then, when I first got to Texas, they signed me up for Social Security Disability. They signed me up. Like, I got signed up for the VA because I was doing stuff, programs through the VA. I didn't go very often because all my service and care was reduced because I was still active. So all that was still being taken care of at the Center for the Intrepid. But once I started getting ready to go to Tennessee to live, all that was transferred to the Nashville VA. So I had a case manager all prepared. So it's not something I so much had to set up. I just had to fill those calls. And by the time I moved to Tennessee, they actually came to my house, and I was about an hour away from Nashville.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it was pretty cool. I didn't know if that was normal or common, but it was a case manager.
Yeah, and no, so that's not normal.
I had a good, well, at the time it was pretty cool. But I there was also, I had a rep through Army Wounded Warrior, and she also linked up with me too, AW2. So those were in place to be able to start receiving care. Now, once it was handed off to the VA, that's when a lot of things deteriorated, of course. But the initial handoff made me feel good knowing that I had care continuing after the Center for the Infected.
Yeah, no, and I do, like, I mean, we all kind of pick on the VA. But
well, sometimes they deserve it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's facts. I know when I got out, cause I also went through a medical retirement. I was able to get my stuff set up with the VA ahead of time. And I think that was a huge blessing because not a lot of people who are just transitioning out, and I say that loosely, but who are just finishing their time and then they decided now they want to be done. Don't get that opportunity to set those VA appointments up before they get out. So it's kind of an uphill battle, you know, going that way. So it's nice to hear that they had you all set up. And when you got to Tennessee, somebody came to your house. Like, who does that? I don't even think they do that anymore.
I don't know. It happened. Yeah. They it was good knowing that to meet them. They did it the one time, of course. And I think they may have had paperwork for me, but. It was the handoff was good.
That's good. That's good. So what would you say is the biggest mistake you made during your transition or something that was like a huge lesson learned for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, kind of like I was saying a little bit ago about having a plan. I didn't have a plan. I had a plan to get out, but not a plan what my life was going to be. Basically, I had someone talk to me right before I left Texas, and they said, what are you going to do with your life? You know, what do you want to do when you grow up? It was a joke, but it's kind of, if you think about it, it's almost like graduating from high school again. Mm-hmm. You have, I mean, you have to do something. I mean, you can't just stay home and do nothing. You could start another career. I was in my mid-20s, you know, later 20s. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I can sit on my laurels and do nothing. But yet, that's a big-ass question. I mean, you know how many high school, college kids going, like, what do I do with my life now?
Yeah.
A lot of them. You know, some of them don't even go to college. You know, some of them don't join the Army. Mm-hmm. My whole future was planned out when I was 16, 17 years old, 17 when I signed up. Mm-hmm. I knew I was going to stay in, make a career out of it. But now that was taken from me. I couldn't continue that easy decision path. It wasn't an easy path, but the decision was easy. Mm-hmm. And so I had nothing. I had nothing figured out. I didn't have a job laid out. I had nothing. I also, one of my other mistakes was I didn't have a support group. I didn't have any family close. I didn't have any friends that I really knew that was close. I didn't have anything I can rely on, people to talk to. I lived, like I said, like an hour away from Nashville. I lived a place called Oak Grove area of Tennessee, just on the Kentucky-Tennessee border there in Sumner County. And so I had nothing. I had no future. I had no hope. You know, for me, it was kind of, you know, painful in a way. I should have figured something out. I should have said, hey, this is what you know, even if it's sign up for college.
Yeah.
I didn't do any of that. My whole goal was to get away from Texas, to get away from the military, you know, kind of not necessarily run away, but I had a hole to throw myself into. Mm-hmm. I just had no idea what to do with myself when I got to that hole. So that was another big mistake, you know, not having a plan. And then when it kind of hit the fan, who did I have to rely on? And I had nobody.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You were going through a lot at that time. So, I mean, I think you should cut yourself a little bit of slack. There were some major changes happening in your life. But I get it because I felt the same way. Like, I was planning on doing 20 years. And now what do you do when that 20 years is not a thing anymore? You know, and I had planned on retiring and being done with it and just like living my best life. And now I'm, you know, 20 something trying to figure my life out. So I totally understand that. So what resources did you use that you found especially helpful that if somebody's listening to this, maybe in the same situation or a similar situation, you would tell them like, hey man, or hey lady, check this out.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a tough question because it all depends on the person, of course, and, you know, what they're looking to have done. But for me, what worked was actually the local VA hospital. The veteran advocates, the Army Wounded Warrior reps, those people, case managers, those that are on your side and not the VA side, you know, to help you work through any issues that you have, like, especially for medically, which was huge for me. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, a lot of like mechanical stuff. I have PTSD stuff. I have physical stuff, you know, so I had a lot of places I was going to. So that was a big one. Anyone that's transitioning out into an area they don't really know, I highly recommend they reach out to VSOs, veteran service officers, from veteran service organizations. A lot of them are great, sources of information, especially locally, and then as well as their overall organization. I would definitely reach out to them. Social media, as cancerous as it is sometimes, and it is, especially political crap.
Yeah.
There is a lot of great resources that I found on social media. First of all, just reaching out to my buddies, those who went through what I did, you know, that I didn't have their phone numbers. Say, hey, dude, I'm going through a hard time. I need to talk to you. Can I FaceTime you? Or, you know, can I do a video chat? Whatever. And then, you know, just having that interaction again with them and getting their phone numbers. And there's also really great groups. Again, this, it all depends on what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But one of the great groups that I actually belong to right now is called the Vetpreneur Tribe, like Veteran Entrepreneur.
Okay.
And what they do, because I'm also a business owner, what they do is they have thousands and thousands of veteran entrepreneurs and business owners, and, you know, from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And so if I said, hey, I need X, Y, and Z, you know, I'm like, hey, who's your go-to people? And you get, you know, dozens of people speaking up like, oh, we know this guy. We work with this guy. So it's like a really quick networking reference for me to get any help, especially on that business side. But there's also organizations about mental health. There's groups, you know, that'll make you laugh, make you cry, whatever it is that you're needing for. There are groups out there. Mm-hmm. So don't rely on social media, but use it as a source. When you transition out, look at the websites of the states. A lot of them actually will talk about veteran benefits. Well, again, earlier when I was talking about one of the benefits of going to Tennessee is they have like property tax relief. Mm-hmm. So if you're a disabled veteran, you know, you pay only like 50% of, you know, your property tax. Mm-hmm. You know, they, you know, because of what you've done, you know, free, fishing license, hunting licenses, you know, that's just Tennessee. Some states vary. Some don't have crap, but some are like just overload, you know, you with benefits of just being a veteran. And then if you're a disabled veteran, a few more things. So I actually looked up Tennessee and what benefits they had, not because I care about receiving free stuff, because I don't even hunt or fish, even though I used to like doing it. But it's cool that, you know, that if there's somebody's therapy is hunting or fishing or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they just need to get out there and get some quiet and throw the line in. I can say, hey, dude, come to Tennessee. They have free fishing licenses. You can go out and do whatever you want. So it's a really great reference for that resource for that. And then, you know, again, just for me, finding volunteer opportunities. So the reason where I'm at today with the nonprofit is that I'm a director of veteran outreach for an awesome nonprofit called Memories of Honor. And Memories of Honor is a national Gold Star family organization. So we honor Gold Star families, those who, you know, lost their loved ones in service to our country. Mm-hmm. And so I started volunteering for them. I wanted to get out there and support these families. And, you know, and I was almost a Gold Star, you know, I almost died out there. So I think that, you know, who we did lose, you know, in my truck was Major Mark Rosenberg. I think that if I died in the blast and he didn't, he would be out there trying to do something to honor, you know, people's memory or, you know, or do it in his own way. But for me, I wanted to give back. So I just started volunteering for them. And next thing I know, I worked my way up to the director of veteran outreach for them. So I'm a national board member. Mm-hmm. And so it's all because of volunteering. I had to force myself to get out of the house which I was my cocoon, as my safe space, if you will. And then I had to go out there in public as a bilateral amputee, which in its own way, I know it's hard to say this, but it's like the visual injuries, it sucks sometimes. You know, I have a lot of good friends that have TBI and they have the hidden injuries. Mm-hmm. And they don't get anywhere half the respect that they deserve for what they've gone through. It's usually people like me that have the visual stuff to get the brunt of, and I say brunt of not in a bad way, but like a lot of people's attention. Mm-hmm. And so what I tell people is that just keep in mind when you see somebody that's in a wheelchair or, you know, has a prosthetic leg or whatever, or a burn, you got to remember that it's like being a celebrity, but not for music or a movie that they filmed or, you know, really great work. It's for the worst day of their freaking lives.
Yeah.
And so I try to mentor people and say, hey, you know, you don't just come up to, you know, someone like that and say, hey, what happened to you? What did you do? You know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the rudest thing somebody can do.
Yeah.
And so I had to, and I'm segueing from that to say that when I went out there, when I had to volunteer, I had to prepare myself for that all the freaking time. And I had to be able to build up like a second skin to that. Not that, again, I'm not whining and complaining that people say thank you for your service. I'm not. I'm talking about the a-holes, one that everyone wants to punch in the face. You know, those guys.
Yeah.
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so I had to get past that. I had to use what I have, the visual part of it, and I can use that to be able to honor those that deserve to be honored.
Well, and I think.
So, yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. I think that too. Coming to terms with it, for lack of better words, means you also have to accept your injury and you have to accept that day and you have to accept all those things that come with it. And I don't know about you, but sometimes when I was going through my recovery process, I was not ready to accept any of that. So yeah. I think that makes it difficult in general, but I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's something that each of us have to battle in our own way.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I first really looked at myself in the mirror in my wheelchair this was while still recovering, still healing. And I remember just looking at myself and how much I hated who I was in the mirror. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that it's not just a physical fight that I'm in the middle of. I'm also in a mental fight, spiritual fight. Of who I thought I was versus who I actually am. You know, I think many of us in uniform, like, look at us like we're almost invincible. It's like, or you know, you put the uniform on every day. It's like, look at me. You know, look what I accomplished. Look where I'm at right now. You know, and I think that's who I was a lot. Not that I was so egotistical and full of myself, but I think that I left a hole inside of me. That when that hole was, when that, you know, that ego, if you will, was ripped out of me. It's like, you are not that person you thought you were. What was left over, the shell of the guy who I thought that I was, really, I really hated that guy. And so that was one of the things that I had to get over, was that the reality of who I am now, because I can't live in denial. I am not the same person I am, or I used to be. I'm in many ways better than I used to be. In many ways, I'm more grounded in reality and be able to help other people, because I know where I'm at. I know my limitations, and I can be able to coach people and say, hey, let's work on your problem with, you know, this is what I went through. Let's talk about what you're going through. You know, so it really helped going through that process to be able to understand that there are people out there that are suffering, not just the way I suffered, but other ways, more traumatic even.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that my process and getting through that would be able to initiate their process so they can get help too.
Wow. That's great. I mean, I don't even know what to say after that, because that is really, I think that's great for everybody to hear, whether they were in the military or not. I think that can affect people in lots of different ways. So that, thank you for sharing that. I'm not often speechless and I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say, but, so let's talk about what you're doing now, because you've worked through all of that, right? And you've worked through your injury and you've And you obviously every day is a battle, I would say. I don't think anybody fully is like past it. But what are you doing now? Most importantly, because I am intrigued by this children's book you talked about. So talk about that a little bit. Talk about what you're up to, where people can find you on social media if they want to reach out to you, if you want to share that. This is your chance to like brag about yourself and what you're doing now.
Well, I'm not much about bragging, but I will try. I get it. You know, that's what this is about, to, mm-hmm. to you know, share who we are. Okay. So what I'm doing now is a few years ago, I helped co-found a social enterprise called Wearable Gratitude. And Wearable Gratitude is a for-profit, but for social good. And what we do is we get donated military uniforms from the men and women who serve, and we also get their stories, and we turn them into what we call Wearable Gratitude, from anything from like crossbody bags, t-shirts, to wristbands, we call Valor Bands. So it's our way of honoring those who served our country. When only our families would know our story, we get to share at least a little part of a story on a card to people all around the world. And so we do that, and it's a very rewarding process, you know, learning about other people who served, what they've done. You don't have to give a uniform on our website. You can actually just share your story. Some people do not have uniforms to give. Like most of us, we got rid of our crap, except maybe the one, mm-hmm. you know, that we wanted to keep in the closet. Or we have, say we have a grandfather that served in World War II or Vietnam, and we want to honor them, you know, instead of that uniform being, you know, eaten up by mothballs or something. They want to do something where they can wear it around, say this belonged to my dad or my grandpa. So we give people that opportunity. A lot of military spouses love it too. They'll get one made of their husband's uniform or their wife, and then they'll say, yeah, they always have a piece of them with me while they're gone on ship or deployment or whatever. So I'm working on that with my partner Amy Cotta. She's the founder and CEO of it. I'm the COO, and she is a Marine mom. She started it because she missed her son, who later on became a Paris Island DI.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, she used one of his old uniforms, and she, you know, mom be mom, and she wants to have a piece of her son with her at all times. And so it was a very cool idea, and I said, hey, let's grow it. So I'm doing that, and that website is called wearablegratitude.com. And my story is actually on there with Amy, so you can look us up more, learn more about the injury and what we've been doing. I also, again, director veteran outreach for the National 501c3 called Memories of Honor. That is a really rewarding organization, especially just even volunteering for being able to do special events or physical events for Gold Star families. We give them memorial bibs with their loved ones' names on it, and then, you know, we give those out across the country. So say someone wants to do a 5K or an ultra marathon, but they want to do it in honor of a fallen service member, we send them out for free. And so we have, I think, over 1,200 names of Gold Star families submitted into our database. We don't use the DOD database or anything. That's disingenuous and rude. Mm-hmm. We only use names that are given to us by teammates or, you know, whomever that wants to honor them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, check that out. It's memoriesofhonor.org. And I'm also a adaptive athlete. I'm sponsored by two organizations. I do hardcore obstacle courses like the Green Beret Challenge. I did that a couple years ago. I did War X last year up in Ohio. That's three different events.
Dang.
I'm a hand cyclist. I did the Marine Corps Marathon. That was my first ever event. I hand cycled the whole thing a little over 3 hours, like 3:09,
wow.
3:10, something like that.
That's awesome.
And basically, I like to prove to myself first that I can do what I used to do. And I also like to be an example for others to say, you're not as bad as you think you are. A lot of our holdups is mental. And I think if we can get over that mental block that some of us have, like, oh, I can't do that because of X, Y, Z. Well, you're missing out on just the doing. Just do it. Don't even think about it. Just, I'm not talking about jumping off a building here. I'm talking about, I'm talking about whatever it is that you want to be involved in, but you think it's too scary or too hard. It could be business, it could be personal. It could be asking a lady out on a date, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. just do it. Don't think about it, because what's stopping you isn't real. And so I like to show people that, hey, if a guy with no legs can climb over a wall, then, you know, you can.
That's true.
And so I work with two great organizations. The first one is Memories of Honor. So I'm one of the reps. I go there and I do these, you know, the physical events that they have set up. And I honor Major Mark Rosenberg for every event that I do. But I also, the other one's Operation Enduring Warrior. And they are another nonprofit. And they're those guys that wear the mask, the pro mask.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all anonymous, and they take a honoree, as they call it. I don't like the name, but, you know, an injured service member or police officer, and then they'll take them to these events, and then they'll help them get through it. Literally,
oh, that's
that
cool.
whole organization is, yeah, the whole organization is designed to lift up, somebody and to support them, not do it for them.
Yeah.
Actually, the first event I did with them was the Green Beret Challenge, and it was like 8 miles, 50 some obstacles.
Oof.
I mean, it was terrible,
oh,
but
gosh.
I was, they actually told me, the organizers said I was the first disabled person to ever get to the course.
Oh, wow.
And
good for
ever.
You.
Yeah, I know, right? That was kind of cool for me. But I asked the OEF guys, I said, what would have happened if I couldn't do it? They said, well, we would have got together, we would have assessed the situation, and we would have dropped out. And I said, well, why? I mean, isn't it your organization to get someone through it? And he goes, no, our organization is to empower somebody to get through it. Yes, if you need to help get your foot on a camo net to climb up or something, a cargo net, we're going to help you put your foot there, but we're not going to lift you over it. We're not going to do all the events for you, because by the time you get that medal or you cross that finish line, it's not real.
Yeah.
You didn't earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we want you to succeed. So what we would do is we reassess and find an obstacle course or an event that you'll be able to finish. Not that you wouldn't be challenged in it, but something that you can feel that you did it. Mm-hmm. And I'll be damned if I didn't feel like I did. I earned that medal. I
Good
suffered.
For you.
We're carrying like sandbags, and we're carrying like truck tires or poles, you know, the whole shebang.
I'm good.
Climbing up and through mud holes. Yeah, I did it all. And
well,
they did it with
for you.
Me. Yeah.
That's
so
wild.
Yeah, that's. So those are the two organizations that really are lifting me up. And so today I'm just training. I'm training for my next event. I'm training for running. So if you go on my social media, it's at SFC, Joseph James, so Sergeant First Class Joseph James on Instagram and Facebook. People are going to see me just constantly giving out a message of support, you know, kind of things that I'm going through. My goal, which I stated earlier in January, is to run again. Even today, I've never actually run a mile. I don't have the ability to. So I'm getting running legs done, and I'm now training to be a runner. And my goal this year is to do a 5K locally.
That's
and
awesome.
So that's what I'm going to be doing. And
that's
I'm
awesome.
Going to keep pushing and motivating and finding a purpose in my life.
Well, thank you for all of that. I think if I had more memory left on my memory card, I didn't delete it all. Stupid me. We could have talked for hours. but no, this is great. And I really appreciate you coming on the show. And I really appreciate all your wisdom that you shared with everybody. And, you know, I think you're a real stand-up dude. And so I'm thankful you came on the show. Like, this was awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity, Kelsey. And you can have me back anytime you want. I got a lot of stories, and most of them are not made up.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad most of them aren't. Well, well, thank you so much. And I look forward to getting this episode live and sharing it with everybody. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And just hit me back anytime you want.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great day.
All right. You too. All right. Bye.
Bye. That was awesome. That was so cool. Thank you for listening to A Veterans Podcast today. To learn more about us or to hear previous episodes, or if interested in being on the show, you can find us at aveteranspodcast.com. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Wisconsin Veterans Network, a Wisconsin nonprofit operated by veterans and serving veterans in need. Till next time.